Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. WITF Starting Over, Life in the Mid-State After Hurricane Maria series continues today with a focus on education and healthcare, two unique challenges for displaced Puerto Ricans who have immigrated to central Pennsylvania after last fall's storms. Thousands of Puerto Ricans came to the region after Maria to stay with their families or make the Mid-State their home after this devastating hurricane destroyed homes and infrastructure on the island. One of the areas impacted the most in central PA was the schools. New students have enrolled in schools throughout the region. Many of them don't speak English or have no academic records. They also have experienced a trauma. Joining us on this portion of the program is Amber Hilt, coordinator of K-12 English as a Second Language and World Language with the School District of Lancaster. Ms. Hilt, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Also joining us is Jamie Foster, Chief Academic Officer with the Harrisburg City School District. Ms. Foster, welcome to the show.
Hello, Scott.
And also Sandra James Goodrum. She's with the Harrisburg School District. She's a social worker and she's a homeless liaison. Mr. James Goodrum, welcome to the show, too.
Thank you. Good morning.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. Jamie Foster, I'm going to start with you with this question, but I want to ask the others as well. When these students arrived in great numbers, what did it mean for Harrisburg schools?
For the school district, Scott, what it really meant was that, one, we do what we always do is educate children, but you also have to do what we do in education, which is to be flexible. When you're dealing with students who may be coming with no records, no clothes, really the basics of life that make you comfortable, transitioning anywhere is always a challenge anyway. But if you're coming and you're literally displaced and you had to leave immediately, you need to handle the immediate things first. So for the district, of course, it's making sure that students have clothes, that they have shelter, that they have food, that we're able to provide those basic needs first. Ms. James Goodrum will get into that later as she discusses what she does as the McKinney-Vento Homeless Liaison. But for us as students, we had a large number of senior students who were in high school. So how do we do with that?
Coming from Puerto Rico.
Yes, coming from Puerto Rico. So really the state initially was taken aback and a little bit off guard, but it became a local decision. They sent out a toolkit. And what we decided was we're going to take students at their word for where they will be in classes. So if you're a junior and you're taking English 11, you have other support services that you need, we're going to supply those for you. We had, out of 160 students, 112 qualify for ESL services.
English as a second language.
Yes, English as a second language, or now as the state calls them, English language learners. So we needed to ensure that we were providing those services for students right away. So that way they could sit down, take WITA, and that's an exam that we give for students to be able to assess how well their English speaking abilities are, listening, reading, and writing as well. So we were able to take care of that, enroll students as quickly as we could, recognizing that we may have to worry about transcripts at a later date. We're able to circle back now as more schools are open in Puerto Rico to learn exactly where students were. But our goal was to ensure that we could provide as much normalcy for students who had gone through a very devastating, traumatic disaster as quickly as possible, as seamless as possible. Registration can always already be a battle if you're coming with all the paperwork as it is, but it's much easier when we're coming with a smile, when we're giving you a greeting, when someone's there to welcome you. Those small things, that customer service piece of education, is really critical to be able to help our students. So we really just jumped right in, did what we needed to do from our ESL side, from the homeless side. The district has always had an ESL social worker. So for students who need advocacy, parents who need advocacy, we're able to do that, partnering with other local community programs as well, so that way we can point parents in the right direction.
It sounds as if, you know, in hindsight, that things worked out pretty well.
Yes.
Would it be accurate to say it was seamless, or were there challenges along the way?
Now, Scott, you already know in education, we build planes as we fly them. So that's what we tend to do. Did it go as well as we would have liked? Monday morning quarterback, there's always things that we could have done better. But what services
like
we,
I
would say being able to maybe provide some services faster for a student. If we did it in 36 hours, we'd love to cut that to 24 or to 12. Realities and red tape. We were appreciative to the state that they were flexible in allowing those types of things and turned it into a local decision rather than have a decision that could affect 500 school districts, but there might have only been six or seven that were affected by students who were coming from Puerto Rico. The great thing is that we're dealing with students who are already American, so we don't necessarily need to have to worry about transfer papers and things of that to be able to prove your citizenship and all of that. We already have that. Now, one of the issues that we might have run into that would be a little bit more of a challenge, but we had to deal with it, were your health records. The health segment will come up later, but that it's just as much as an issue for students because you need to come to school with immunization records as well, proving that you have been, you know, that you've gotten your shots for TB, for MMR, things of that nature. So we had to forego those as well, but also provide students with them just in case, recognizing that a booster won't hurt you if you needed to have that. So we feel that we did as good as a job as we could. The great thing is that the support services that we were providing to students from Puerto Rico, we already provide to students in Harrisburg schools. So it wasn't something that was new for us.
Quickly, any idea the number of students who came from Puerto Rico? And I also understand it was not just Maria,
no,
but the other hurricanes as well.
We have 160 students in total, of which 112 qualify for ESL services, but we've had a little over 200 students displaced from all three major hurricanes last fall.
So Amber Hilt, let's talk about the school district of Lancaster. What about the numbers? I'll start with the numbers. Numbers that came into the Lancaster School District. Are you aware of the numbers?
Yeah, so we had about nearly 300 that came in. Majority of those also qualified for ESL services. I would echo everything that Harrisburg said as far as the challenges and just that quick pace of turning around services for kids. One of the pieces that was definitely a struggle for us, we had to work with parents to have those open conversations, are the students that come also with individual education plans, better known as special education needs. And so having those frontline conversations with parents when they came into enrollment about, you know, are they doubled up and considered to qualify under homelessness laws? You know, does their student have an IEP? What English
IEP, just to let people know.
Individual education plan.
Okay.
What is their English level? And then serving those students, because we had, you know, 200 plus students that qualified for level one and two English language development, which is essentially being a non-English speaker. The staff on the ground, we have great teachers, but the numbers, I mean, our classes bloomed from maybe 18 students who, are non-English speakers to upwards of 30. It's a lot of students to individually help them acclimate to a school, help them acclimate to their peers, and then also just learning that basic English language before we even attack the academic side of things.
Both of you have listed some major challenges there, and I want to talk about homelessness in just a moment, but what was the biggest challenge that these students faced and the schools faced?
I think the biggest challenge is that they're facing so many challenges all at once. The one thing I will say is that our families and our students are eager. They are appreciative, spent many times in homes with them with backpacks and clothing and food drives, and they're very open to the services we have in Lancaster. For example, I can think of a mom who said, I was a dental hygienist in Puerto Rico. And so her first goal was, let's hook up the literacy council, let me get some training in English in my field. So then I can quickly, go from the job that she had taken back into a career. So I think it's holistically, just to say that they're very eager, but it's the partnerships then and knowing where to send families and students for support within the community.
You are the coordinator of K-12 ESL, English as a Second Language and World Language in the school district in Lancaster. Lancaster has one of the biggest immigrant populations in central Pennsylvania, probably in the entire state. So this is not anything new for you, but those numbers coming all at once.
It's not new for us, certainly. We do have a large Puerto Rican population in Lancaster. What's a little different is for the past 5 to 6 years, we've had a large immigrant population. So refugee resettlement is large in our area. So those families come with similar needs, But they're not coming all at once in droves of 200, nearly 300 families. Excuse me, not families, but students.
Right.
So we kind of circled back around, and we were able to reach out again to the partnerships we have in place and some of the agencies that were supporting the immigrant influx, because that has leveled off, are now gearing up to come together to support the influx of students and families from Puerto Rico, which is great.
I'll ask you the same question that I asked Jamie Foster. Was the school district prepared for this?
I think I would give the exact same answer. I think we were prepared. But as students come into enrollment, I'll give an example. 1 week, we had one individual test 38 students for ELD services, English Language Development Services. Another individual test 12, and they were already scheduled out for the next week. So some of it just simply became manpower, because we wanted to get our students with their English levels, with whatever needs met, and started in a school. We don't want them to start in a school and then perhaps maybe shift over to another part of town a week later. We want it to be as seamless as possible, knowing we can't always control all of those elements, but we do our best to try and make that transition into school smooth.
There are so many issues to discuss, but one that both of you have mentioned, and I want to bring Sandra James Goodrum, who is a social worker in the Harrisburg School District, and that is homelessness. Ms. James Goodrum, this was a problem to begin with in Harrisburg and other urban school districts throughout Pennsylvania, where there are a lot of students, and a lot is an okay, let me just say, there are a number, a percentage of students, a lot, one is, it, more than one is a lot, mm-hmm. of not having a home. But I think many people were under the impression that the Puerto Ricans who came after Maria or the other hurricanes, that they were living with family or they had a place to go. That's not necessarily the case.
Correct. Families were leaving Puerto Rico, coming to the mainland to move in with family members or friends of family members or complete strangers. Someone told them of somebody that they could possibly stay with. In some instances, you had families, one or two families, living with another one or two families. And so there were a lot of people stacked up living there, what we consider to be doubled up in our homeless world, McKinney-Vento homeless world. So it was a difficult, it was a traumatic situation for everyone to leave from, and then to come here, you have no place to stay, and now you're doubled up, or tripled up, or quadrupled up with other families.
So homelessness presents a whole lot of challenges to begin with.
Yes.
But when you have a student who doesn't have a home to go home to, may not have food on the table when they do, wherever they're staying, go, you know, leave school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking just even for adults, how much of a challenge it is, but how much more of a challenge is it for a student to go to school? I don't know. Performing well in school, is that a priority at that point when food, shelter, all those things are not something that you're secure with?
Right. Of course, those basic needs have to be met first. You can't sit in the classroom and concentrate on any type of academics if you're hungry. We've been fortunate in our school district that we do feed breakfast and we do lunch. And as well, whenever they come to me and they enroll into my homeless program, they are offered meals. We have an energy pack program, which is a weekend supply of food that a lot of our students, close to 500 of our Harrisburg School District students now take home every weekend. And that is just something to help supplement what parents may already have in the home. But we also make referrals for hot meals as well as meals that they can actually take home with them. So there are agencies and things in the community to assist with. It's just a matter of tapping into those and making sure that we're making the proper referrals, that being the social workers and the counseling staff, so that families can have exactly those needs that they have, that they're in need of.
But that's food.
Absolutely.
What about homelessness?
And so that also presents another problem. Of course, like you said before, we were hit with the influx of our evacuees. Homelessness was already an issue in Harrisburg. It seemed to never be enough places, never enough shelter, never enough homes. The majority, vast majority of our families are what we consider to be doubled up, meaning that they're living with someone else, their name is not on the lease, and they're temporarily staying there. Whenever we had families come in from Puerto Rico, a lot of them were moving in with families that were on in subsidized housing. And so that presented another problem as well, because you don't want to do anything where you're going to jeopardize someone's living situation. The housing department was lenient, as in they allowed them to stay a little bit longer because they knew people were coming in. But eventually, these families did have to find another place to live. But housing is, of course, at a premium. I'm finding now that I'm getting, in the last week or so, I've heard about four families that have actually found houses, apartments to stay in. Even if it's outside of our initial Harrisburg School District area, we're still servicing them by getting their children back and forth to school, because that's a part of the McKinney-Vento Act. We have to do that.
That's a law you're talking about, right?
Yes, McKinney-Vento Homeless Student Act. Mm-hmm. Because of that law, we have to do some things that we just have to take care of and we have to do. And as Jamie Foster mentioned, we were doing it already for our other students that were considered to be displaced. So we just kind of fell in with that.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Smart Talk is continuing our series. It's WITF series, starting over, Life in Midstate After Hurricane Maria. We're talking about the thousands of Puerto Ricans who came to central Pennsylvania after Hurricane Maria. Actually, as we've heard, the other hurricanes as well. Hurricane Irma, was just a few weeks before. We had last year was just a devastating year for hurricanes in the Caribbean, and so many people have suffered. Joining us during this portion of the program, Jamie Foster, Chief Academic Officer with the Harrisburg City School District, Sandra James Goodrum, she's a social worker with the Harrisburg School District, and her specialty is working with homeless students and their families. Amber Hilt, coordinator of K-12 ESL, English as a Second Language and World Language, with the School District of Lancaster. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Obviously, many of these students, if not most of these students, have gone through a tremendous life-changing event. They have suffered great trauma. They may have lost family members. They were separated quickly from their family. They're coming to a place that many of them are unfamiliar with. And as we've heard, many of them face other challenges, like not knowing the language, not knowing the people that they're living with, maybe not having a place to live at all. So this is something that many American students deal with, some of these problems, but it's not very often that you have students, kids that may range from 5 to 17 or 18, that deal with this all at once. Jamie, how is the school district dealing with the students who are facing this tremendous trauma they've gone through?
The district has great partnerships with many local health community organizations. We partner with Hamilton Health, who will be on the segment later. Mm-hmm. And they have provided tremendous support for students, because for many of them, sometimes it's just making sure that you need a physical. Is everything all right with you on the inside? You were surrounded by a great deal of water. You were surrounded by a great deal of just trauma. So is all okay? We also have a great partnership with Presley Ridge. Presley Ridge provides counseling to students all within the district, as long as they can provide health insurance. However, recognizing that we had students who probably couldn't produce a health insurance mm-hmm. identification card at that moment, Presley Ridge was flexible enough to provide those services and referrals anyway. For students who are secondary in grades 6 through 12, we provide student assistance program. And that is a program for any student enrolled in Harrisburg School District. Most school districts around the country have it, where if a student is dealing with possible drug, alcohol issues, if they're dealing with management, trauma, anything, the anxiousness, anxiety, they can enroll for that, and that is free. We have a school right now who is engaging in trauma-informed classroom training through one of our principals at Downey Schools. We had four schools that were mainly really affected by our displaced students: Ben Franklin, Downey, Camp Curtin, and one more school that I can't think of course.
Well, I think we got
Foose. Okay. Foose. So, but those schools have a very high influx, and in part because they're also surrounded by subsidized housing as well. So when we had to deal with those things, we had students to be ready where we already have services with Presley Ridge. We already have other services. But we wanted to make sure that we're able to, as Ms. James Goodrum said, when you can provide a lot of those basics for kiddos, that really eases a great deal of trauma and stress. Because I have clothes on my back, I have shoes on my feet, I have food in my belly. So while I do have the trauma of what's going on in my outside life, the normalcy of school helps greatly to lessen some of that impact in some ways.
That's interesting, that having that routine of going from 8 a.m. till 3 p.m. actually helps.
Yes, tremendously. If you think about it, school-aged children spend the majority of their day in school. So when you're able to have some levels of normalcy, I wake up in the morning, I have breakfast, I get on the bus, I go to school, I do my schoolwork, I come home. While you do have to come back home to tragedy, and not all of our students did, but when you have to come back home to trauma, and many of our students do, not just our students who were displaced, but many of our students in Harrisburg deal with traumas at home. When you have that, that reality can still be lessened when you know that tomorrow is Tuesday, I'm coming back to school, and I'm going to come back on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. So that can lessen great deals of issues.
Amber, did you actually see students that expressed what they've been through, and you could tell that they were traumatized by this?
Absolutely. And I think they were continued to be traumatized because they were coming home to situations where maybe we're not going to be living here tomorrow, or maybe we've had a lot of secondary migration. So I went to another state or school district first, maybe even locally, like Harrisburg or Lebanon, and now they've come to our city because their parents were not finding work as fast as they would hope, or they weren't finding housing as fast as they would hope. All of that is internalized by our kids, right? They know that's a reality. That their parents are very fearful and anxious. All of the services they talked about, the student assistance program, just getting kids, again, with that wellness physical. We have agencies that did some in-kind work where we were able to have dental and vision checks. Things we already have in place, but our partners have been really gracious in knowing that these students and families are coming generally with nothing, just with what's on their back. We have students who've definitely expressed. We've been able to have buddy students or mentor students when these kiddos are coming in, and a lot of teachers have expressed, because we've had so many, that they're very open to sharing their stories with one another and with their other classmates.
Another issue that the school districts have dealt with in central Pennsylvania, I know both Lancaster and Harrisburg, is that Maria was at the end of September, very last few days of September and early October. The influx really started kind of in early to mid-October, maybe even lasted longer than that. So the school year had already started. So, okay, you have the situation where you have so many students that English is a second language, and they have to, be concerned with learning English, but they also have to catch up academically. How have they done that?
So I think there's a few things. One is that we work with teachers to really have their instruction be differentiated based on embracing what the students know, finding out what they're bringing to the table, prior knowledge maybe in the subject or just what they're interested in, because student choice is huge to get them invested in their learning. I think the other piece is we have after-school programs, and going back to that normalcy, we offer after-school programs up until about 4:30, 5 p.m. There's snack involved, there's busing, so that gives them another opportunity to maybe receive tutoring or attend a club, just to kind of bring length to that day of normalcy. They're at a place where they feel safe. The third thing would be our summer programs, which we're gearing up to run, that can really focus on fostering that English, because really that's their base for attaining the rest of the academic success while they're here.
By the way, do you know whether the majority of these students are going to stay, or are there some that are going to go back to Puerto Rico? You mentioned that obviously wherever employment takes you, housing takes the families, that they could be moving around.
Right. Similar to our students generally that come from Puerto Rico, they're not sure. I've had formal and informal conversations with parents. It seems that many seem to be transitioning within state not necessarily planning to go back to Puerto Rico, but that's just anecdotally.
There might not be a whole lot to go back to. Jamie, I'm curious about standardized tests. Mm-hmm. Would these students have to take the Pennsylvania standardized test?
All students in the state, they'll sit for math. If they, regardless of how long they've been here or not. So all students who came already will sit for math. And because what we talk about a full, I'm going to get jargony here. When we talk full academic year, if the students were here as of October 1st, technically that student would count per se for Harrisburg schools. If they arrived after that, that score would count for us for the district, but it wouldn't count for the school. If the students are in their first year of English language learner and English language learners and in their first year of services, they will not sit for the English language arts PSSA. If the students are in high school, the same will be for the ELA Keystone. They won't sit for that, but they will sit for the Algebra Keystone and the Biology Keystone exams.
You know, this has been an ongoing conversation with standardized tests, mm-hmm. not just with the influx of immigrant students, mm-hmm. But students where English is not their first language.
Correct.
And taking these tests.
Mm-hmm.
They're at a real disadvantage.
Students who can't read in general are at a real disadvantage because most of the tests, quite honestly, are reading assessments that measure literacy, mathematics, and science. What the awesome part is about when you're taking PSSA or other standardized assessments, the Department of Education recognizes that students need accommodations. So if those accommodations are provided to students, meaning you might need a highlighter, you might need someone to read this particular passage to you, you might need to have extra time. If those accommodations have been given to the student prior to the assessment, then those students can receive those exact accommodations during the assessment at that time.
Sandra, you mentioned that there has been some relaxation of at least one law, but I'm hearing that overall, that even across the country where, like with Medicaid, Medicare, we're going to talk about healthcare in the second segment of the program, that there have been some deadlines extended. It sounds like just from even what Jamie was describing, that this is happening overall, correct?
Yes. Well, with are you referring to the McKinney-Vento Act
yes,
in particular?
Yes, yes.
So that act was basically designed so that there would be no barriers to a student receiving an appropriate education regardless of their living situation. So whether they were in a shelter or on the street or doubled up living with another family, all school districts needed to make sure that students could get an appropriate education, get back and forth to school. We provide them with transportation, uniform, clothing, whatever they needed, so that when they were in that classroom, they would have all those basic needs that we talked about earlier, all those things as other students had so that they could succeed.
We have a question here from a listener, and actually the last couple days we've gotten very many similar questions. Bonnie's in Harrisburg. Bonnie, you're on the air.
Hello, this is, I'm calling from Harrisburg. I have clothes, shoes, makeup, which girls love to have when they go to school, and pens, pencils, those kinds of things to donate. How do I donate them to these children?
I would suggest that you get in touch with the school that is closest to where you are residing. I believe you said you are in Harrisburg. A lot
right.
of our school
I'm closest to John Harris High School.
Right. So I would suggest that you get in touch with John Harris High School to Ms. Crowder, who is the secretary there.
Ms. Crowder. She is the she's the office assistant for John Harris campus of Harrisburg High School.
And she should be able to direct you as to where the most appropriate person to take your donation. And thank you very much for thinking of us.
Yes, Bonnie, thank you very much. And as I mentioned, over the last 2 days since we've been focusing on this, we have had a number of people who have called in and asked how they could donate their time. Transportation is an issue we found. We actually had a suggestion of an employer that is hiring some of the adult refugees coming in. So I think we're going to post as much of that information on our website as we can, where to reach out to. That's WITF.org. I want to thank the three of you for being with us and the work that you're doing, because obviously just what you're describing, this has been a huge challenge. And it sounds as if, okay, we're 6 months into it, but a lot of lessons were learned, a lot was learned, but you're on top of it. Amber Hilt, coordinator of K-12 ESL and World Language School District of Lancaster. Jamie Foster's the chief academic officer, Harrisburg City School District. Sandra James Goodrum, Harrisburg School District social worker. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
We're going to talk about healthcare coming up next. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. The influx of Puerto Ricans into the mid-state presents healthcare needs as well. There's the language barrier, few or no healthcare records, and mental health is expected to be a major issue. Joining us during this portion of the program is Dr. Paul Botras, who is a family physician with Wellspan Family Medicine in Lebanon. Dr. Botras, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us is Dr. Shanique Jarrett, is a resident at Wellspan Good Samaritan in Lebanon. Dr. Jarrett, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And we have joining us is Ada Pronko, a nurse at Hamilton Health Center in Harrisburg. Ada, thank you for being with us, too.
Thanks for having me here.
And on the phone, we have Yesenia Colon Rivera, who's with Wellspan Philhaven, a psychologist. Ms. Colon Rivera, thank you very much for joining us as well today.
My pleasure.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, here's the broad question. What are the major healthcare needs of the Puerto Ricans who have come to the United States mainland after Hurricane Maria and the other hurricanes as well?
So I guess we can start with the fact that primary care is probably the best, and it was the biggest bottleneck in Puerto Rico before they got here. It may have been known to a lot of people, may not have been known, that in Puerto Rico there was a big disparity of healthcare, as there is here. Because of wage gaps and things like that, a lot of doctors had already fled the island. So patients, when they come to see us, we have a pretty good availability in our office. It's easy to get in, but like patients here, there's a very big disparity. Patients come to us with very few medical records, and you know, there are some that come with DVDs and novels of health records. Kind of as was mentioned.
When you say novels, meaning that they have a lot.
Endless really? Amount of records. Yeah. So much. But then there's some that have, oh, what are health records? I didn't know I needed those. Getting those records is also impossible because of the electricity, doctor's offices were destroyed, and communication is still a problem to get the old records. As was mentioned in the last segment, vaccinations have been kind of a disaster for us. A booster never hurts a kid, but you know, when you're repeating a whole series of vaccines, it becomes a little bit of a bigger task.
You just listed a whole lot there, but I want to kind of focus in on that the lack of records. I mean, nowadays we hear in the United States that one of the things, when I say United States, obviously this is United States, but on the mainland, that you know, one of the things that we hear most often is that one of the real improvements we have made is that we have our records electronically, that medical professionals can get access to those records. When there are no records, how much of a challenge does that present to you as a physician?
It's a pretty big challenge, I'd say. You know, when it comes to kids, it's the vaccinations, it's the birth record, it's autism screenings. There's a lot of different things for kids. When it comes to adults, I mean, it's always easy to order a set of baseline labs and kind of repeat the testing. But kids don't like getting stuck for blood. Kids don't like vaccinations. And frankly, sometimes patients don't want to see the doctor. I hate to say it that way, but you never go to the doctor for a good reason.
Yeah. Dr. Jarrett, what about at Good Samaritan?
I've noticed that it seems to be the entire spectrum of humanity that you normally see. We just have all of these people, as Dr. Botrios said, from those that have no records that never come to the doctor, and then you have those that are always at the doctor and have all of their records. It's no different from the rest of humanity. It's just crunched into a small time period and a large volume of people. I found that a large challenge is the language barrier. That makes it hard for people to receive care. I speak a little bit of Spanish, so I find that I'm a little more comfortable than others, but we do have a language line. It's a telephone interpreter, so it is a little bit awkward and uncomfortable, but it's better than nothing, and it is something that does help people receive care.
See, Lebanon has a fairly large Latino population, so that part of it isn't new.
Correct.
But having so many people that may not be able to speak English coming all at once, is that the bigger problem?
Yes, that is a big problem. We don't have a lot of providers that speak Spanish that, you know, feel comfortable with the language line. So it just makes it a little bit cumbersome, but we do our best to make sure that our patients are receiving the care that they need.
What would concern me there, and I'm sure it does you too, that when we're talking about healthcare, that you need to be precise.
Yes, these are people's lives.
Right. You don't want to provide a medication that they may be allergic to.
Correct.
You know, there are so many different things. So that I can see where language is even more important.
Yes, there's a concern that a lot gets lost in translation, you know, both literally and figuratively, when we have these patients that don't speak the same language as the provider.
Have you had any problems so far? I mean, where there was, and Dr. Bartos, you jump in too. I see you nodding your head in affirmative. Have you had some issues where because there was something lost in translation?
Absolutely, yeah. There's different dialects of Spanish. So sometimes our translators are South American, Central American, and the Caribbean dialect is, from what I understand,
different.
A little bit different. So, I mean, there's a lot of back and forth on the language.
Mm. I want to bring in Ada Pronko, who is a nurse at the Hamilton Health Center in Harrisburg. Do I understand that you also have family in Puerto Rico?
Yes.
Okay.
I do have. My mother stays in Puerto Rico. Thank God she is back in with power. She has everything that she needs. But it is I went and visited back in December, and you can still see how things are not back to normal completely. There's places that you can't reach. There's a lot of people that really need health care. And in our facility where I work in the women's department, so we do have a lot of patients, pregnant patients. They're coming almost due, no records. So that makes a little bit of challenge of taking care of the patient, because you have to rush everything into getting all the blood work and everything that you need to them to deliver.
Wow. Because I'm just thinking of the stresses that, listed them earlier in the program, of all the things that most of these people have been through, and then to add the stress of almost ready to deliver a baby, I just can't imagine that. They must really be, I don't know how they can do it, quite
it's
frankly.
Kind of a challenge for them. I try to, like, I'm Spanish. I try to help all the people try to, I've been here for 12 years, so I try to guide them where to go, like everything that I know, so I can help them, like places where they can look for a job. Like, you can look for places where you can they can help you with ESL to learn a little bit more English so they can move on.
So the sense I got, even from the first segment of the program with the schools, and it sounds like you're doing the same thing, is that you're not just focusing on one area. You're not just focusing on their health. You're trying to help out in other areas as well.
I do like to help people. So when they come in and it's on Spanish population, not even only Puerto Ricans, all the Spanish population, like if it's a language barrier, they get stuck sometimes and they don't know where to go. So I try to help them out and try to guide them. We provide with medical assistance so they can enroll and get benefits about insurance, and they can continue the care in our facility. We see them, even if they don't have insurance, we can continue to see them until they get insurance. And
I want to talk about that insurance in just a moment, but first I want to bring Yesenia Colon-Rivera into the programs with Wellspun Phil Haven. She's a psychologist. Ms. Colon-Rivera, as we have heard throughout today's program and yesterday as well, that it's not just the children, it's everyone, that they have gone through a traumatic event. If you can refer to these hurricanes as one event, they've been ripped from their homes. They may not have a home at all back in Puerto Rico. Many of them have lost family members, have lost friends, have suffered injuries themselves. They're coming to a country on the mainland where they may not know the language, where they don't know where they're going to live, whether they're going to be able to work, get a job, put food on the table. I mean, those are major challenges in anyone's life. How are these immigrants to the United States from the island of Puerto Rico, how are they dealing with it, and what, as a psychologist, would you be looking for? What kind of advice would you impart to them?
Definitely, it's been a very traumatic experience, and many of the diagnoses that we see is general anxiety disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, and once they settle in, we start to see the depressive symptoms, particularly because of the impact of the weather. You remove an islander from an island, and that's primarily one of their coping mechanisms. Many of the people that come here come not necessarily because they wanted to, but because there were any other options for them at the time. And sometimes in families and in couples, a challenge that comes up is that people get resentful to one another because maybe one of the family members really wanted to come and was all about coming, but then the other person wasn't really wanting to come, which in the long run starts to put a lot of tension between them.
I heard that yesterday with our guest. They were talking about in Lebanon, they were talking about a couple situations where there were 15 people living in two rooms, and that, you know, that it was creating a lot of tension, and a lot of people 6 months into this are getting impatient, that they want to find jobs, that they want to be able to find their own housing, which is a challenge itself, finding housing, so that those things create a lot of challenges in themselves.
Yeah, so in my work as a psychologist, what I try to do, similar to what the other the person before me was commenting on, is a lot of case management, is really helping them get connected with case management services, with getting familiarized with the area, not only services for physical and mental health needs, but also for leisure activities. A common concern that comes up is like, I don't know where to go to socialize or how to meet people, and particularly for the Hispanic population, and even more so for the Puerto Rican, which is the population that I'm more experienced with, those social ties are key to buffer the stress of acculturation.
I want to switch and talk a little bit about insurance. One thing to remember when we're talking about immigrants from Puerto Rico is that we're talking about an American territory, and that many of the people who have come to the mainland had Medicaid, were under Medicaid insurance or Medicare insurance, or had their own private insurance. You move from state to state on the mainland, and a lot of times you can transfer that insurance or you can find other insurance. It hasn't exactly been that easy when coming from an American territory, Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, onto the mainland. Has insurance, and I'm looking both at Dr. Jarrett and Dr. Boutros, has insurance been a major issue for those coming to the mainland?
I think it's a little bit of an issue in the primary care and the specialist world, but from the standpoint of emergency medicine, it works very well. I had a gentleman, for instance, I'll tell you, had a prostate problem and then incidentally had a heart attack 2 weeks later.
Oh, wow.
We couldn't get him into the urologist, but he went to the ER and got, you know, finely tuned, and then he was like, well, you know, I need to follow up with a specialist, but my insurance won't cover the outpatient care. So thankfully, at our office, which I work at the same office as Dr. Jarrett, we have five social workers and a great intern. I think they see every single one of these patients. They kind of go to the ends of the earth to get them coverage, whether there's emergency Medicaid and they get them eventually on Access or Gateway. So I think that the access is there for them, but it is a challenge. Their insurance doesn't exactly work very well here, except for in the emergency department.
Why doesn't it work well?
I'm not sure. I think it's a state-to-state thing like most other health insurances. It's your in-network, out-of-network kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. When you had this gentleman that you were talking about, I mean, I know you can't give away too much information, but what age range was he in?
He was, I think, 55 to be.
55.
Yeah.
And coming to this country again with those medical issues, we know that there are people who have lived their whole lives here on the mainland who, or if they don't have the insurance, that follow-up care that you were talking about, will just say, well, I'll deal with it on my own. I imagine that is even with this influx of immigrants, that could be even more of an issue.
Absolutely.
You have the language, the socialization, all those things.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So at Hamilton Health Center, you accept insurance, right?
We do accept patients with insurance, without insurance. We have a department when they can help the patients to enroll to the Medicaid, and they can provide all the services to the patients. And even though the patient don't have insurance, we can still see them.
Do they get, even if they had Medicaid, for example, in Puerto Rico, I know, I'm sure it doesn't automatically transfer to Pennsylvania, but does it make it any easier?
It's like they have to close the case and like they have to open a new case here, but it will take like, I see them, they take like 4 weeks to get enrolled. So in the meantime, we can still see the patients.
Ms. Colon Rivera, mental health is one of those issues that over the years, there has been a controversy of how much insurance companies, insurance will cover when it comes to mental health. I think society is finally catching on that it is a big part of a person's overall health. But has that been an issue with Philhaven as far as the number of immigrants were coming in, whether they have insurance or not?
Definitely. I mean, personally, I haven't been able like to work with people that have been displaced because of the Hurricane Maria yet. I would say my idea about that is that people are still like prioritizing getting a job and getting housing, like getting the basic needs met, and also starting to get more familiar as to where to go for services. But it when it comes to medical assistance, the coverage that is received here in Pennsylvania, it's a very good coverage.
Let me interrupt for you for just a moment. How important is the mental health aspect of this?
Oh, it's crucial. It's crucial. When it comes to mental health needs, typically tend to be undermined or overlooked because of physical health needs tend to get prioritized, and understandably so. Also because of the cultural component of the stigma that there still is. And then what we start to see is that people do not get treated for their mental health symptoms as soon as possible, and then they started to compensate, and we do see them in the emergency room, which also puts a burden to the system overall, because this could have been prevented beforehand.
Dr. Botcher, I just want to switch gears now. Prescriptions and medications. There is a shortage to begin with. What has this done, this influx of thousands of people to Central Pennsylvania, meant?
I think from the medication standpoint, it hasn't had much of an effect. I think that the shortages were more related to inpatient in that realm. There were 10 medications that were short, and the FDA never released the name of them to prevent people from manipulating the market, as had happened with that
gentleman. So you kind of had to guess, huh?
Yeah. The major thing was the IV solution bags made by Baxter.
Which is in Puerto Rico.
Which is in Puerto Rico, yeah. The factory was damaged and there was no electricity, so the numbers of these IV bags were very limited. The FDA did ease their restrictions and allowed them to be imported from Mexico and Europe, which helped quite a bit. And that's more of an inpatient thing, but that's sort of kind of over now, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. So we only have about a minute or so left. I want to thank the four of you for being with us today. If you could leave some information with our audience, what do these new immigrants to Central Pennsylvania, what do they need when it comes to health care?
I want to say one thing really fast.
Okay.
If anybody doesn't have health insurance, go see a doctor. We can get you to a social worker that can help you get insurance. That's the main thing. Health insurance should not be a limitation to your care.
Okay. Challenges, what do you think that you'd like to leave with people, Dr. Jarrett?
I think that the challenges that we have with this new population is the same as with any population. These are just people that we have to show love to, just like anybody else, and give them the care that they deserve. And we all deserve to be taken care of well and shown respect and get our needs met.
I want to thank all four of you for being with us today. Yesenia Colon Rivera with WellSpan Philhaven. She's a psychologist. Dr. Paul Botros, a family physician with the WellSpan Family Medicine Lebanon. Dr. Shanique Jarrett, resident at WellSpan Good Samaritan. And Ada Pronko, a nurse at Hamilton Health Center in Harrisburg. Thank you for being with us today
thank
and
you.
Shining
Thanks.
A light on this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we take a Smart Talk road trip tomorrow. We go to Hershey. We'll be at the Hershey Story. One of the things we'll be talking about there, when we talk about the Caribbean, is Milton Hershey and the Hershey Factory in Cuba. That's just one of the issues that we'll be discussing on tomorrow's program. Still time, if you'd like to be in our studio audience tomorrow, to go to WITF.org/events to RSVP to get your name into coming into Hershey, downtown Hershey, and you can see the museum as well. So be sure to do that. We'd like to see you tomorrow. Always have a good time with those.